Welcome to the Strong Like Mum podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Strong Like Mum podcast. And today I am really excited to be joined by Jenna Machocki, PhD. Jenna is an immunologist and author of The Science of Staying Well and her new book, Your Blueprint for Strong Immunity. Jenna is also a twin mum. Hello, Jenna.
Hello, Shakira. Thanks for having me. And yes, our fellow twin mum.
Yeah. So bear with us on this conversation. We're very tired. Yeah. I'm really excited to talk to you, but I'm also, this is probably one of my more daunting podcasts because I don't know anything about your field of expertise. Well, I say nothing. I have my own experience with my own immune system, and I know a little bit about it, obviously being in the field of health and wellness. But this is really specific, and I've listened to so many podcasts that you've done, I've read your books, and you are just such a fountain of knowledge. I'm fascinated by the things that you say, so I'm really excited. So let's get started. The first thing I wanted to talk to you about was something I've heard you mention a few times, which is this idea that your immune system isn't something that lies dormant and only kicks into action when you pick up a virus or an infection, that it's actually working every day. And I'd love you just to talk a bit more about that, because I absolutely had completely the wrong opinion. I thought your immune system sat there, and when there was an infection, the army put on their helmets and off they went.
Yeah, that's a great place to start, because I think historically, we've looked at it through this lens of infection protection. So it only kind of kicks into gear when we get those annoying symptoms of, you know, whatever the latest lurgy is. Yeah. But actually, it is working really hard all the time. And it does so many things beyond just protecting us from germs. I mean, it's involved in healing and repair. If you have an injury, even if there's no infection present, it's your main cancer defense system. So it's working really hard actually all the time, removing potentially cancerous cells. It's involved in growth and development. So in our kids that are growing all the time, it's helping remodel those tissues to allow them to grow. And it's involved in pregnancy. So there's a huge amount of immune activity going on in the uterus, at the placenta, to support the growth and development of a baby. So it's something that I feel like we should be appreciating every day, not just complaining about when it lets us down.
So we'll get on to pregnancy and how it sort of changes and how it works during that time in a minute. But on that general day to day, in what ways is our immune system supporting us when we're not feeling unwell? What kind of things is it helping us to do? I know you mentioned there about repair and recovery. What kind of things does it do?
Well, we live in this world that's full of germs. I mean, the air that we're breathing, every single surface that we touch is covered in germs. And our immune system, we tend to think of it as being sort of one thing, but it's actually this real complex dance of many things. So when I teach students about the immune system, we include in that definition things like the lining of our airways and the lining of our gut, our skin, the microbiome that lives upon that. It's basically multiple layers of defense to the outside world. And it's also a sensing system. So it's constantly looking for signals from around you and also within you to decide what kind of immune protection you might need. So if you're very stressed, your immune system will be able to sense that stress chemistry in your body, and it might then change how it performs based on what signals are coming in. So it's kind of like this sensing system. It's always on. It's got a kind of surveillance function. So when you're moving your body, you're helping move those immune cells around your body, which are looking out for things that are a problem. And it can be anything from, you know, when we walk down a busy road and we're breathing in pollution, your immune cells and your airways are helping your body to cope with that. When you are around lots of people and there's people coughing on you on the tube or, you know, on the bus in the morning, your immune system's helping to combat those before they make you sick. And most of the time it does a really good job, but every now and again something slips through the net and we end up unwell.
So you touched on stress there, and I just wanted to lean into that a little bit more, because that's huge. I think I've only in recent years, you know, as I got older, really appreciated how stress can make me feel. And, you know, this idea that stress doesn't just have to be negative, that we can really be enjoying what we're doing, but our body is still being stressed. And then also how stress impacts the immune system. Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's a great point. And stress in itself is a reaction that our body has evolved to have for good reason, because like you say, it's not just about negative stress or distress. It's also about eustress or positive stress. So a little bit of stress can, you know, motivate us to do well in an exam, or it can motivate us to train hard for an event. But when it sort of tips over to the other side, it will have a negative effect on our body. So it's kind of, I feel like modern world has kind of tipped us over into stress being negative.
Yeah.
And it's also how we view it. There's actually some research showing that, you know, when we have that mindset that all stress is negative, we feel stressed all the time and everything's stressful, then we do experience the negative effects of stress more than if we try and flip that on its head and remind ourselves that not all stress is meant to be negative for our health.
So how does stress interact with the immune system? Because, you know, is it just a myth, or is it true that if you're stressed, you're more likely to get sick because you're going to be run down or exhausted?
Yeah, it's definitely true. And there's a actual physiological basis for it. So we often think of stress as sort of something being in our minds. It's how we think and feel. But no matter what is stressing us out, it could be a major life event. It could be something that we're excited about, like going on holiday. But, you know, taking your kids to with you kind of could be stressful to plan for that, even though you're excited. It, you know, it could be that you're crossing the street and something comes out of nowhere and you're about to be hit by a car and you have that moment of stress. No matter what is stressing you out, you only have one kind of biological stress response that goes on in your body. And this is a release of all different chemical mediators that are going to have a whole host of effects. Things like raising your blood sugar so that you've got energy to get you to safety or motivate you to do what you need to do. Changing your heart rate, changing your focus, your mindset, how you feel. But what that stress chemistry also does is suppress your immune system. That's because it's sort of triaging your energy into other areas. So your immune system is quite energetically costly for your body to run. And if you've got, you know, something that you're really stressed about, it should be, in theory, a short-term thing, then it's going to put the energy into that stress response to motivate you to get done what you need to do, get you to safety, and it's going to dial down your immune response. So in that short period, it could leave you open to getting sick. But at the same time, we all know that stress is not really short term anymore. Things tend to go on and on. Just day-to-day life can feel quite stressful sometimes. And so over time, you do get really run down. And there are measurable effects in your immune system that we can look at in the blood and see that your immune system is suppressed, and therefore you're more open to infection, injury, your recovery time is going to be longer. And we know that, you know, stress can affect things like recovery from operations. It can affect how well people do with treatment for chronic diseases, or, you know, how well they can manage conditions. So it's really pervasive, and it's one of those things that's quite hard to appreciate how big an impact it might be having in our life, because it often feels like something that's hard to control. Mm. Like, I know I'm personally quite a big stress head, like I get quite easily stressed. So I need to really work hard to, as I see it, sort of empty my stress cup, because mine is quite small, fills up very quickly. And so it's all about kind of finding those little things that you can do every day to just empty the stress cup and kind of future-proof yourself for the, you know, inevitable stresses that are going to come along.
It's really interesting, because I think I'm like you, I'm quite a stress head, but I am I'm also, you know, I've been on a real mission. My New Year's resolution this year, it was to sleep more and do less, because I really felt that I needed to prioritize my health, which, you know, I talk about health all the time and I work in that industry, but I was living a really unhealthy, in inverted commas, lifestyle, because I was, you know, running myself ragged, trying to get everything done. And I almost began to adopt this mindset that if I wasn't stressed or tired, I was being lazy. You know, this idea that I could actually have loads of energy and go to bed early and that would be me not working hard enough and not doing, you know, not doing enough. And actually what you've just said there, you know, it's actually an investment in yourself. And it's really important, I think, that we start to change the dialogue around that to make sure that that more people feel that they can and should rest and really understand that.
Yeah, exactly. And I've definitely fallen into that trap as well. And you almost have to kind of feel like you're going against the grain of normal life to push back against that. Mm. And we kind of almost lose our intuition, I think, especially as a parent, because you're constantly thinking of the needs of your children, which are always changing, that you can kind of forget that that's a mental load in itself. Mm. You know, what is it, PE day today? What stuff do I need to pack in the school bag? Who's got what activity after school? Like that, you know, all those little things, it's like a mental load that sort of can build up to be quite a lot of stress on our shoulders. And so it's really hard to sort of almost forget that we, you know, we need to counterbalance that somehow. And to do that, sometimes it takes a lot of effort to kind of adjust how your week looks so that you do have those pockets of time just to sit and take stock and breathe and lean into those various tools that can sort of unload that stress and help us be more prepared for what's around the corner.
Yeah. So you mentioned that, you know, stress is really, stress is complex, that the immune system is really complex, you know, and we've touched on a few things there that can have an impact on our immune system. And I was looking through your book this morning and you have What Impacts the Function of the Immune System. And on the inside, you see overall immune function, response and balance, and the amount of things that can affect it. So I'll just read just a few. We've got stress, genetics, age, time of day, physical activity, habitual diet, sleep, alcohol intake, medications, lean muscle mass, smoking, nutrient statement, and then obviously infections. And there's even more there. But when we're looking at, you know, this podcast is Strong Like Mum, and I'm really fascinated about, you know, the lifestyle of women during and after pregnancy. We are both mothers. It can get really busy. If we want to try, if we feel like we're, you know, either exhausted or we are picking up a lot of bugs, you know, children bring all sorts home from nursery. We want to boost our immune system as mothers. What are those simple things we could be factoring in to help us, whether that be nutrition advice or, you know, is it the fact that we have broken sleep? How can we try to get the best type of sleep to just give our body that rest that it needs to keep our immune system healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I really wanted to convey in the book that there's so many inputs into how well our immune system performs, because a lot of the time we see on social media and online these very simplistic messages whereby, you know, you just need to eat these 5 superfoods to have a strong boosted immune system, and it's really not that simple. So I kind of wanted people to take comfort in the fact that it's really complicated, but there are kind of these key areas, and I always say, like, think of them as little dials. You've got 5 or 6 dials for supporting your immune system. Can you tweak each one of them just 1%, and then, you know, next week just crank it up another notch or two. And as a parent, that is really, really difficult because you're constantly putting other people first. And I would always say that diet's only one piece of the puzzle. I would start probably from a point of self-compassion, because that's something I'm quite passionate about. It's something I only really kind of realized when I was writing this book, that there's a whole set of scientific studies looking at people who are taught to be more compassionate to themselves. They had measurable improvements in their immune system when they looked in their blood. Mm. And I just found that mind-blowing, because like, nobody ever talked to me about self-compassion when I was younger. And I think that would have been quite useful. I almost feel like they should teach it in schools. Yeah. But particularly for mothers who are probably waking up thinking, gosh, I've just had, you know, my second coffee of the day because I've had the worst night's sleep. And we know from the science that having a broken night's sleep means you're more likely to have blood sugar problems, which means you're more likely to reach for the wrong foods, which means by the end of the day, you're more likely to have overconsumed calories. Right. And so the cycle begins. So there's that trickle down effect. And I think just the awareness piece is really important. So bringing awareness to that, I have had broken sleep. I don't feel great. Reminding yourself why, because, you know, you have this lovely small human being in front of you who's kept you up all night, and saying, you know, I have a choice every time. Maybe having another coffee's not the best for me. It's going to really play into that stress response. You know, it elevates cortisol, which is this immunosuppressive stress hormone. Maybe I can make some good choices with my meals, even though I do feel like just reaching for, you know, the chocolate for breakfast or whatever it is, because I know I'm going to feel sustained. Yep. Getting some good healthy protein sources in there to give you that feeling of being satiated. And then, you know, get out and get some sunlight, get that fresh air, exposure to daylight. It's really important for our circadian clock. Mm-mm. And our immune system is very sensitive to that. Most of our immune cells are under that circadian control.
Okay.
Getting into nature, there's a lot of evidence to say that being surrounded by nature, it's good because it's calming our stress response. Taking the gaze to the horizon. So, you know, when we're looking at our phones, we have a very narrow gaze, and our eyes are then sending a signal to our brain that we're very focused. But when we're looking at the horizon and we're out on a, you know, a nice walk in nature, our eyes kind of relax and they change their position in our head, which sends a signal to our brain that it's calm and it's safe. And that can, again, help take the edge off, you know, any kind of stress or negative feelings that we're experiencing.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. And I can totally relate to that, because my children, when we, if we go out, they, you know, if they get stressed or they're in the house for a long time and we go outside and we go, you know, to a big open field, instantly their mood is lifted and they have that instinct to run and be free and, you know, enjoy that space. So that really resonates mm-hmm. with me. You mentioned there the circadian clock. Can you just, for anybody who's listening who doesn't know what that is, just explain what that is.
Yeah, so we're kind of circadian beings, which means that as humans, you know, we have evolved to be awake during daytime and to be asleep during nighttime. Obviously, as a parent with young kids, that doesn't always work out. But what it means is that when light hits our eye in the morning, it's actively relaying a signal to our brain that it's daylight, it's time to be active. This initiates changes in our immune system, because when you're active and you're outside, you're more likely to come across germs or, you know, injure yourself or have some sort of need for your immune system to be doing something. And then equally at night, it's more a call to shift gears in your immune system and have kind of that repair response, healing any damage, a bit of housekeeping is going to go on to prepare for the day ahead. So it's really important that we give our immune system these cues that, okay, we let our body know that it's daylight by being outside, seeing the sun. And then in the evening, we don't see light. We keep everything dim, you know, try and stay off of our screens as much as possible to help kind of guide us into to sleep. So our immune system really needs these sort of cues, and we can do that in the best way is, you know, getting up, getting out in the morning, and particularly in the morning it seems to be quite important to get that daylight.
Great. Okay, so now 20 minutes in, let's talk about what people maybe expected when they saw that we're talking about the immune system, which is about nutrition. Which again, you know, is an important part of the immune system. During the whole COVID pandemic, and I know you've spoken about this as well, you know, suddenly it was like vitamin D everywhere in your face. You need vitamin D, you need vitamin C. These are the two things that are really going to help. And suddenly you couldn't buy any orange juice because everyone wanted vitamin C or whatever it was. So how does nutrition impact our immune system, and what are those key things that we really should be looking for?
Oh, that's a great question, because I think that's everyone's kind of go-to, isn't it, with the immune system. And part of the reason I started writing books, because I felt all of the information was really outdated. You'd have these books about the immune system that would just cycle through each of the different essential vitamins and minerals, telling you what foods contained it and what it did for your immune system. And I was kind of like, there's so much more to it than that. So yes, you need to avoid deficiencies in any of the key micronutrients. So that's the vitamins and minerals that are considered essential for our health. Vitamin D is the one that we mainly get from exposure to sunlight. So it's the one that there was a lot of noise during COVID, because there's always been public health guidelines saying that we should supplement in the UK, particularly because we don't get enough sunlight. If you spend a lot of time indoors, if you're older, if you have more melanin in your skin, because that makes the reaction more challenging for the conversion. But we know that being low in vitamin D is associated with more viral infections, more upper respiratory infections, and reduced recovery, more likely to get things like pneumonia. So I would say to anyone, it's a really good one to be supplementing with daily. Otherwise, I always kind of advocate for a food first approach. So trying to get as much of your nutrition from food, because food has some additional benefits that you can't really emulate in a supplement. And that's, you know, it's full of fiber, which is feeding the gut microbes, and the gut microbes are the main educators and trainers of our immune system. And we have to remember that about 70% of our immune system's in the gut. And actually, there's quite a body of evidence showing that the fiber in our diet and looking after those gut microbes is really, really important for training our immune system, not only in the gut, but that seems to get translated to other parts of the body and can reduce things like the incidence of you know, cold and flu viruses, how well we recover from infections. So really, like, fiber is kind of the forgotten piece in sort of immune boosting nutrition. And so I think if you're getting your nutrients from food, then fiber is going to be a part of that, because all plant foods contain fiber. So that's kind of the basis. And then the next thing is really make your diet as minimally processed as possible. So processed or ultra processed foods is this kind of new category of foods whereby I think the easiest way to describe it is, you know, if you were going to make that in your own kitchen, what ingredients would you need to make it? And then if you compare that to something that you buy, like a ready meal, or, you know, like the cakes and pastries and the general kind of junk food, look at the list of ingredients. If it contains things that you don't or you wouldn't use if you were to make that food yourself at home, then it's probably an ultra processed food. And that's fine to have every now and again, but they have over the last sort of 20 years started to really expand, and in some cases up to 80% of people's diet is made up from these ultra processed foods. And not that they're inherently bad, but they're basically taking up space for, you know, the fresh fruit and vegetables, the fiber, these phytonutrients, which are plant nutrients that are we don't have a recommended daily allowance for, but, you know, things like polyphenols, curcumoids and turmeric, you know, all these kind of plant compounds that occasionally make it into the headlines in the news. But there's, you know, tens of thousands of these, and they seem to be really important for the immune system. And that kind of field of evidence is only really just starting to provide these answers.
So with good food, I understand, you know, there are certain good foods that you're talking about, fiber foods that contain a lot of fiber. Mm-hmm. These are really important. Can bad foods, in inverted commas, do these bad foods have a detrimental, you know, do they do damage or do they do nothing? Does it sort of just flush out and actually, you know, the good will do good and the rest just goes? Or can it actively be detrimental for our immune system?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's probably a tricky one to answer. I think it would be how much of those foods are you consuming, the so-called bad foods? And most of the evidence looking at diet and your immune system is now showing us that your overall dietary pattern is more important than, like, focusing on one or two specific foods. So that means if you have an overall good dietary pattern across the week, but then, you know, every Friday night you go to your favorite fast food restaurant and eat whatever you like, that's probably going to have a minimal effect on the greater scheme of things. I think it's when those foods are becoming a larger part of our habitual diet, it's doing several things. So it's taking up space and we're missing out on some of those key nutrients, fiber, certain vitamins and minerals and plant compounds. And it's possibly having a negative impact on the microbes in our gut, because they require fiber as their fertilizer. So if we're not providing that, we risk losing some of those microbial populations. And they actually produce a lot of, sort of, we call them metabolites, the byproducts of when they break down fiber for us. That are, it's kind of like our own personalized pharmacy, and it's absorbed into our blood and it's having broad effects on our immune function. So there is some evidence to say that over the decades, as our diet has become more deficient than fiber and we eat more of these processed foods, we're progressively losing some key species in our gut that who knows if we can get back. The other piece is looking at blood sugar. So we know when we eat a diet that's rich in ultra processed foods, we can ride that blood sugar roller coaster. I'm sure everyone is familiar with that. You know, you eat something, you have the blood sugar high, then you have the crash that makes you want to reach for something that's sugary. And we know that these extreme fluctuations in blood sugar can have an immediate detrimental impact on our immune system. So it could therefore leave you more likely to get an infection if you were, you know, exposed to some germs.
Right. It's so fascinating. Just before we wrap up, because we've only got a few minutes, I wanted to just touch on pregnancy and the immune system. So, you know, again, just to use the pandemic as an example, you know, pregnant women were suddenly put in this special population that had to, you know, really be kept safe. And our immune system does change. The immune system response changes when we're pregnant. It would just be great to hear a little bit from you how that changes and ways that we can really support that during pregnancy.
Yeah, it's a great point. So the baby is technically like genetically the mother, but it also contains some of the genetic material from the father. So that means that it's foreign in terms of how your immune system sees things. Your immune cells will be able to know that what is your own tissues and cells, because it has specific molecules on the surface. It can identify that, so it's sort of looking at yourself, and then the baby will also be expressing molecules on the cells of the developing baby that are from the father. So your immune system could potentially see that as foreign. It's as if you were given a tissue transplant. You know, if somebody gave you a skin transplant from somebody who was genetically different to you, your immune system would reject that unless you were given special immune suppressive drugs. So it's kind of the same thing that goes on with pregnancy. So the human body has had to sort of develop ways to tolerate this foreign thing inside us. And it does that by creating a sort of immune suppressive environment. So there's specific immune cells that actually switch off immune responses that are there around the placenta, acting as a kind of firewall between the immune system and the developing baby. And that means that particularly during the second and third trimester, you are more susceptible to infections because you have a certain level of immune suppression going on, just so that you're able to allow the fetus to develop. So that is why generally pregnant women are seen to be a little bit more at risk of infections. Ultimately, it depends on your exposure as well. You know, if you're at home and you're not exposed to many germs, then that's obviously beneficial. But in certain jobs, you know, pregnant people might also have to interact with a lot, like if you're working in a school or a nursery or a hospital, then there may be extra precautions that need to be put in place. Is it
a good thing to pick up that? I was always under the impression that actually picking up a few bugs in pregnancy was great because I was getting those antibodies and passing those antibodies onto the babies. And I think, again, I could be completely wrong now, but I think women that had coronavirus in pregnancy, the babies were born with some antibodies. I think that's right.
Yes, yeah.
So can it be a good thing to get a few viruses in pregnancy? Because, I mean, that sounds really scary. You know, I don't, for anybody listening that might be pregnant, they might be thinking, oh, no, I'm more susceptible for viruses, so I've got to stay at home.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily the case, or
I think it's one of those things. It depends on the infection. So we know that certain bugs are really not good in pregnancy just because of what's going on with the immune system during the pregnancy. But I think for the routine you know, coughs and colds and things that are doing the round, there's they're generally not going to cause too many problems in a normal, healthy person who's pregnant. And yes, there are studies showing that the immunity that the mum is developing to coronavirus is then passed to the baby, and the baby tends to keep the mother's antibodies for about 6 months after birth. So the first 6 months they've got the circulating mum antibodies that they've got during gestation, and then these start to wane between 6 and 9 months. And then if you're breastfeeding, you also get the benefit of some of the antibodies being passed from that as well. And there's been reports of, you know, if a baby gets chickenpox, when the mother has had chickenpox previously but she's breastfeeding the baby, then that can help the baby to fight off the infection. But it's kind of a different for different germs. It's one of those annoyingly confusing things of the immune system.
Well, like you said, it's hugely complex, which is something I'm definitely taking away from today. And I feel like we've just scratched the surface. One final thing, I think this is something that you have said, which really, really stuck in my head, which was that it's not what infection the person has, it's what person the infection has.
Yeah, exactly. You know, germs are part of, you know, the world that we have evolved in as a species. We all respond slightly differently to germs, and there's a reason for that, because if we all responded the same way to every germ, we probably have been wiped out as a species by now. But it's, you know, how you go into an infection can help determine how you come out the other side. So it is about trying to have those preventative things in place, trying to give your immune system all those inputs from your diet, your lifestyle, your environment, in order to give you the best chance of bouncing back after an infection.
So fascinating. I mean, thank you so much for your time today. I could talk to you for hours. We don't have hours, but it's just so incredibly interesting. For anybody that wants to find out more about you or get in touch with you, where can they find you on social media? What's your website?
Yeah, mostly I'm most active on Instagram. So it's Dr. Jenna Machocchi. That's Dr. Jenna_MacocHi. And then if you Google my name, you can find my website. I'm sometimes on Twitter, but one social media account is more than enough.
It's more than enough. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jenna, for your time today. I really appreciate that. And thank you for talking and sharing everything.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Thanks for joining me. And I hope you can tune in again soon to another episode of the Strong Like Mum podcast.
What about that?